Welcome back to the Mini PC Show, episode 84. I'm your host, Brian Thomas, and I am joined with Door-to-Door Geek and the Flying Rich at theflyingrich.com. Guys, what's happened? It's been a while since we've seen each other.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year is right.
Yeah, it's been nearly a month. I mean, time flies, man. And when you miss shows, this is the one show I can say without a shadow of a doubt, when we miss shows, the amount of stuff just starts becoming astronomical that we could talk about.
Well, my problem is a lot of stuff I don't bookmark, or there's very...
Your mic went out again.
Like, oh, I won't bookmark it or whatever, but we'll talk about it on the show. And then several weeks go by, and then I'm like, well, what were all those things I wanted to talk about? There were things I wanted to talk about, and I don't remember.
That just happened to me earlier today. We were having a conversation about a chip that I ran across that had, what was it, NPU on it. And neural processing unit. And I'm like, was that AI? Where is that link? Sure enough, it didn't get posted to the spreadsheet.
Well, and that's one of the things I've talked about in the past. I don't know if I've talked about it here, is I used to blog more, but a lot of what I did blogging wasn't made public. It was just, hey, how the heck do I do this so I know what to do in the future? Because there are things you just don't do on a regular basis. You may do it, you know, once or twice a year. You may do it once every couple of years, and then you have no damn idea.
I have to fully agree with you on that, Rich.
Yeah, I have to have Gitpocket installed everywhere, or else I go crazy. And I have just the routine down to where anything that even resembles content for any show, I bookmark with Gitpocket. It automatically gets pushed to spreadsheets, Google spreadsheets. So I essentially have it double backed up.
Yeah, I do that for the most part, but a lot of times I'm on my work laptop and they got it that pretty locked down, so I can't do that. I can go to, I don't know how you say it, Digio, and I can manually bookmark it because it doesn't allow me to put my plugin into the browser. But personal stuff, I'll use Diigo. I hope I'm saying it right.
Yeah, I don't do anything on a work laptop except for work, just because I don't want to be that guy.
Well, I mean, I'll browse the net and I'll look at some YouTube videos, you know, if it's tech or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of what I do at work is there's YouTube videos on. So I'll be looking at YouTube videos for work stuff.
Yeah, my company's been blocking a lot of stuff with YouTube these days.
So the fun thing at work is almost everything social networking is blocked. What isn't blocked is Google Plus.
Oh, you had to bring up Google Plus, man. I am so sad that's going away. I really am.
I'm not, and it's only because of this. I think it's actually getting better because people who are ignorant are just leaving right now.
People are abandoning it.
And going to other networks. And the people that I'm seeing that are leaving, I got only two words for them, and that's good and riddance. Keep going. Don't come back. I'm pretty sure the last week of Google Plus is going to be the best, nicest people ever on like any social network.
Yeah, right.
I've had great exchanges on Google Plus, and because it's mostly tech people, and you know, very little otherwise. And I definitely will miss it. My flyingrich.com does pull in my Google Plus feed. You know, it aggregates all of my social media. And one of the things, you know, talking about Google is king of killing things, but YouTube would automatically post your likes to Twitter, and I was pulling in my Twitter posts into that, but I killed that off because I'm now directly pulling the YouTube feed, so both my videos and what I like on YouTube are getting pulled in. It's a pain in the butt doing this kind of stuff because you always have to, you know, be aware of who's killing what or changing what interface, and that's going to screw up your website.
I honestly think that's what they want. They want to do basically managing their stuff Nazi style, aka every single day keeping you off center, keeping you guessing, keeping you wanting something else, keeping you not sure about what's going to happen tomorrow kind of thing.
Well, Google is definitely doing that with Google Voice. And it used to be that you'd be able to plumb your asterisk to Google Voice and get basically free SIP service. Oh, Yingling. Oh, that looks so good. I hate mm-hmm. your door.
It is good, too.
Hmm. Yeah, that does look good.
Well, two quick changes of topics. Number one, I want to thank Danny Meeks on Discord, which is another server where people can aggregate mostly gamers on there, he helped me through my Rock Pro 64. And he gave me a whole bunch of advice. I couldn't get it running exactly right, but he at least made me plug it back up and play with it. And what happened was I ended up going to Armbian and seeing that they had a Debian version and a Ubuntu version. I downloaded the Debian version, flashed it to an eMMC, thanks to Lyle using the new and improved USB 3.0 nice. Flasher. Oh, it flashes stuff so quickly. I mean, I literally can't even take a drink of my water and it's already done kind of thing. And now it's running a full desktop GUI, and this is a RK3399 processor where just a month ago, no Linux was running on any RK3399. And I was losing a lot of hope. I was losing a lot of faith, is what I'm going to say. And this thing is now running a full desktop with XFCE Chromium browser. And it is unbelievably desktop-like. I'll just say that. Now, of course, there's a lot of x86 software I can't install on it. In air quotes. A lot I can't install on it. But I can install... What I can install is running unbelievably well. I can literally bounce through tabs on my browser and load up tabs in my browser just like I can on virtually all of my other hardware. It is literally that good. Now, my newest hardware is 5 years old. Let's get that out of the way. You know what I mean? My desktops are 5 years old. My laptop is 7 year old. And you know, it's only older than that kind of thing. But it is unbelievably well worth the money. Less than $100. You get yourself a computer with 4 gigs of RAM. I am utterly blown away and impressed at the performance of it right now. Now, I also did look at Exagears so I could do x86 emulation. I go to their webpage, and I'll make sure I have a link in the notes to their webpage, and they basically tout what you can do with Exagears. And then I go through what they at least tout, and I'm like, I don't even want any of that. This is not a good marketing scheme they have, because what they say is you can run Skype. I don't want to run Skype. TeamSpeak is closed sourced. I use Mumble. Telegram is something I would never trust. I'm not going to run Telegram. Chrome browser. Well, I'm running Chromium. I could run the Chrome browser to try to do Hangouts. That's one thing. Dropbox. Why the hell would I give all my information away? I'm a man. I run Nextcloud. Spotify. Why would I run Spotify? I have all my music on hard drives. I don't need that. TeamViewer, I guess I could need it, but I don't. .NET framework. Sorry, but I don't do illicit drugs. There's no reason to run .NET on my devices. J downloader, never heard of it. Netflix. Why would I possibly use Netflix when I have a Plex server with multi terabytes of video on it? Mono. Why would you run
Mono x86?
I have no idea,
but you could run Mono ARM.
It's like they have drugs. Next one they mention is WinSCP. WinSCP. They really tout WinSCP as a feature of running Exagears. That's when you know they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Then they have Plex, which makes no sense because I can
already run Plex. Would you run on Mono on ARM?
No, I can already run Plex. Yeah. And then there's uTorrent. That's their. So then I literally went to this page getting ready to buy Exagears. And then I said to myself, after looking at this, why would I spend $25 to run software I don't want to run? Because I wanted to try it. I wanted to see what I could run. And it's like, no. And then after reading, I did have my suspicions confirmed. It cannot run 64-bit software. So if you go to find a piece of software, like, I don't know, Steam, it is only 64-bit, which means this cannot run it.
But, wow. Okay.
So I don't know why I would get Exagears, so I'm not going to get Exagears. Now, if a listener tells me, I want you to run Microsoft Word Door and tell me how good it runs, well, then I'll spend the money, I'll buy it, I'll install it, and I'll see how it runs. But I'm not going to buy it for myself because this is not... Maybe when it first came out, it was really desirable, but I'll say to me right now, it is not. Second thing, there has been news. The last time we were together, the last two times we were together, we talked about the chip shortage. It is real. It is very real. It has not gotten any better at CES. More than a couple of the manufacturers said this will be shipping, but not for 9 months because of chip shortages.
Now, when you say chip shortages, Dor, which chip specifically are you talking about?
It's mostly the lower Intel processors, the ones that used to be Celerons, which are now, I believe, the lowest i3 grade processor, but they're the Core M ones. The lowest mobile ones and the ones that used to be Celerons are the ones that they're basically having trouble shipping. My guess is they're just cutting back production, that and nothing more.
They want you to buy more expensive chips?
No, driving up price. When you have scarcity, naturally prices will increase. That's just the nature of business. But there's more than a couple people saying by the end of the first quarter, we could start to see the end of the shortage. So hopefully by the middle of the second quarter, by like May, we should start to see an actual resurgence of these processors being more abundantly available. So we're going to still have hardships when it comes to lower end devices, especially when it comes to like NUC size computers, I think, and low end laptops, I think are going to be the two biggest things hit.
Well, we still have AMD is still in the game, and they make a damn good processor, man, with their Ryzen product. And I know last year at CES, they announced their mobile processors, their 2500U Ryzen 3 and Ryzen 5, and they're making their way into some mini PCs this year too as well at CES.
Okay. Dor, you got a comment on that? Because I've got to change the topic slightly.
Just a little bit, and that is we need competition in this industry as customers. We need competition badly. For about 2 years, we've had almost no competition. AMD has been bad, really bad, as far as heat, as far as power, as far as battery life, bad, bad, bad. In the last 6 months, they've gotten a hell of a lot better. Really a hell of a lot better. And honestly, I think this next 6 months are going to be among the best 6 months that they've had in like 3 or 4 years.
So are we going to be like every other tech show on the planet that makes predictions and doesn't review them the next year?
I didn't even know we made predictions till you told me.
Because I got two more for you.
Okay.
A Ryzen SBC and no real gig Ethernet.
I thought we already had one.
Or USB 3 for the Raspberry Pi.
I thought we already had a Ryzen SBC.
Do we?
Which was called Jetson.
Look, oh my gosh, I'm already... Nah, Jetson is way, way... Like, that's probably super pricey, right?
I expect a Ryzen SBC to not be cheap.
Yeah, but the Jetsons are always like $400 or more.
Honestly, I don't know how expensive they are, but I would expect a Ryzen SBC to be minimum to something.
Yeah, I would also. Let's just say sub Jetson priced SBC that's running a Ryzen.
That would be interesting.
I think the Udu Bolt is the first with the Ryzen V1000 that was It's actually pretty dang good.
Yeah. I think we're finally going to see an actual improvement in the Raspberry Pi and now I can't remember the show.
March 14th?
No, I can't remember the show now. There was somebody who said on the actual Raspberry Pi Foundation website, there was a blurb that said this year they were actually going to make a significant change that would deem all of the old operating systems not compatible. It would be that big of a shit of a change. I expect it to be extremely underwhelming. I got no problem saying that. Extremely underwhelming.
Well, they already went from 32-bit to 64-bit, but they're still running 32-bit OS on the Raspberry Pi 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the one thing I would figure is they're going to have a 64-bit OS. That would fit that press release. Don't get me wrong. I do trash the Raspberry Pi a lot, but I think it's a fantastic device. Fantastic device, just absolutely fantastic. I really want to see gig Ethernet, USB 3, USB-C on a device. And right now, if I was going to buy a low-end device, it would be the ROC 64. Not the ROC Pro, but the ROC 64, because for the same price as a Raspberry Pi 3, I could get a 2 gig of RAM with USB 3 on it.
Yeah. ROC 64 to me is the absolute sweet spot right now. Here is what my prediction is what I'll say. The Raspberry Pi hardware will be unbelievably underwhelming, but here's the utter truth. And the utter truth is the hardware doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I can do 15 teraflops of performance on a processor. What matters is how optimized is the code. Here's what I'm going to call, and I'm going to say that the Raspberry Pi this year, their hardware change will also entail complete and utter openness, which will allow the world to hone their software to where even though their hardware will be subpar, I do believe that they will have the opportunity to have their software so heavily optimized and tweaked that it will blow away like hardware from other manufacturers, to where you will have to spend twice as much or three times as much money to get equal performance out of it while still maintaining low heat, low power usage, and unfortunately low I/O through networking and USB. But the core processor, I think, will start to run actually really nice, because when it comes to IoT, when it comes to edge networking, when it comes to all this stuff coming on to the future, it's not about raw data speeds. It's going to become more important with what you do with that speed. And I think this is going to be an opportunity for them to actually set some trends.
I think that's very reasonable. That's very doable.
But yeah, Brian, do you have any predictions?
I don't have any predictions, but just going back on what you're saying about the Raspberry Pi, what Rich commented on, I think those are the general public concerns regarding the Raspberry Pi. These are the things that they ought to know. But I'd like to see some improvements in SD speeds. So we have some updated SD cards out there.
Sure.
Speaking of SD cards, this week they announced the official for sale 1 terabyte Lexter SD card, line 811 in the notes. Samsung already released the next gen SD card, which has 8 times, I believe, the speed of today's SD cards, but they're not yet, the hardware isn't ubiquity out yet. And now in the most modern Samsung phones for the last 2 generations, you could put either a classic micro SD card in it or the new generation, I can't remember what it's called, it's something like UHD, I think.
Right.
Where the pins are actually like in the middle of the card. And the speeds with that is near insane. Because once you get above a terabyte, you better start having good speeds or else everything's going to take forever.
All right, so I'm getting kind of chills here. MSRP, $500, but pre-order from Adorama for $400. Okay, so definitely don't buy it when it first comes out unless you definitely have a need that it's going to be give you a return on your investment. But wow, that's a big deal. And you know what? If our single board computers could use something like that, that'd be fantastic. But you got to contrast this against Costco had a sale, 8 terabyte USB 3 external hard drives for $129. They were $169 not too long ago.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the current price is, but that was a sale price of $129. So look, and don't get me wrong, I've on my MacBook Pro here, I've got a SD card slot with a micro SD card in it. And it's a custom holder, so it's flush. And it's a 256 gig card that I forgot what I paid for. It was dirt cheap. I think it was $40. And my SSD on my MacBook Pro is 256. So I've actually doubled my MacBook Pro. So if this comes down to price, I could drop it into my MacBook Pro, that would be still cheaper than some of these, you know, SSD swap kits.
Yeah, but I do think you're right, Brian. I think we're just going to keep seeing SD storage prices dropping like considerably, and sizes going up. And honestly, I can't believe it. Even on, I can't remember what network it's on now, Fast Money. They actually mentioned on a like corporate executive stocks and bonds and the market show, they actually mentioned how Seagate, there's only now 3 companies doing mass storage anymore, but how Seagate, their prices keep dropping, but their profit margins are not going up and their sales numbers are not going up. So they are worried about it, but they said for consumers, it's a good thing. Here's the thing, the NVMe drives are going to take over the world by the end of this year. That's my call. I believe classic 2.25 or 2.5 or 3.5 hard drives are going to go the way of the dodo bird. They're going to basically be dead. I can see SD cards, because SD cards are actually in a lot of enterprise infrastructure because of VMware. Yep. But I can see cards like this actually becoming once again useful, because there was a time where everybody had SD cards for all kinds of stuff, whether it was cameras, whether it was sound recorders or phones. Because of the size boost that we're getting back with this, I can see them again coming back into grace.
All right. So I got to tell you.
Lost your mic again.
Yep, we can't hear you.
I'm trying not to move my cable. Do you hear me?
There we go.
That's what she said last night.
Yeah. didn't know you were watching.
Michael Scott.
So just going back to the, when my daughter's going to tell her kids, when I was your age, we used to have to walk all the way to the remote. Because now you use your voice to control the TV. Let's see. I guess it was 2000. We had a 2 terabyte in 1999, 2000. 2 terabytes was a phenomenal amount of storage. It was almost unthinkable amount of storage. We had this thing the size of a corporate commercial. That's a commercial's the right name. Commercial refrigerator. And it had double-sided, like, DVDs in it. And it had, like, 3 robot arms and 3 readers. And I was just in awe watching it. I was like, oh, my gosh. You know, this is a thing that was probably worth a house, what a decent house would cost.
Lost you again.
Lost you again, Rich.
Crap. Am I with you guys?
There we go.
So that 2 terabyte refrigerator, you know, commercial refrigerator size device, that was nearline storage. It wasn't even online storage. You know, you'd request something and you would get it eventually. That probably cost as much as a house. Now, for $1,000, you have exactly that, and if you sneezed, you'd lose it.
Yeah, and I mean, we used to say, when we saw the latest, greatest hard drive, I could put everything on that.
And then everything got to be bigger.
Well, and now we see the largest drive, and you're thinking, yeah, I could use that.
So the problem that I constantly wrestle with is I've got a bunch of 1 and 2 terabyte drives at home. Do I plug them into something? And I have the hardware to do it. I could do it. But why would I, when I could just, for $120, go buy an 8 terabyte drive that's bigger than all of the spare drives I got kicking around? It's not worth the heat or the electric to plug these things in.
Yeah, I mean, I have right now Rock 64, the 4 gig of RAM, running my Nextcloud server with a measly 1 terabyte external drive. And I will end up buying a larger drive, but here's the gimmick. I'm going to take the larger drive, use it as the main, then I have another Rock 64. I'm going to have that connected with a smaller drive, and I'm literally going to rsync over certain amounts of the data just so I have the data backed up. To me, the only reason now to have multiple drives is so you can do your own backups, so you can have a little bit of redundancy.
Did I talk about on last show, since we're talking Rock 64 Pro, did I talk about putting the daughter board on it?
You talked about trying the USB and having one work and one not.
Okay, all right, so I did cover it. So that's cool, because look, if you want to plug another that stupid board in and be done.
Yeah, the 2 pieces of hardware I definitely wanted to bring up in this episode. One is in line 791. Banana was completely opened. Think of it as like saying the word ARM whenever you hear banana when it comes to a board. There is not one single company who makes banana. There's multiple companies that make banana hardware. It's basically an ARM style of processor. It's like saying Exynos, but it's banana. There is a company to come out with a banana pie. Banana pie were the originators, the maker out of, I believe, Hong Kong. Banana pie is looking at launching a 24 core ARM server, and they do have a Ubuntu video showing how it is compiling the Linux kernel, and you can see all 24 cores getting pegged at once. I truly believe ARM has a place in real big iron, big steel infrastructure hardware. And I'm perfectly okay if the company providing that is not an HP or is not a Dell or is not somebody like that, but it's actually Banana is making the inroads that I'm okay if that happens. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but I like the idea of them at least putting it out there, showing video, showing that we have this and it's actually running. I would love to see one in motion. I would love to be able to access one because I'm going to doubt I'd be able to afford such a thing.
Oh, the big win on this to me would be I would love to have that, and I would love to have some virtualization running on it. And, you know, boy, I was going to say Novell. VMware announced that they're running on a Raspberry Pi. This is what they need to be doing. They need to be running VMware ESXi on this.
You're absolutely hitting that on the head. But my concern is, who's going to put this in their production? You know, if I was running a company, I would go with what works in the industry. I wouldn't put all my eggs in my basket with Banana Pi.
Yeah, but it's ARM. You know? It's a, you know, nearly data center class ARM. Let's say that.
But yeah, here's the thing. It's hard to equate ARM versus Intel comparisons. We'll just do a hypothetical. For this thing to actually be successful, it's going to have to offer at least 150% economy versus an Intel processor for even the daring companies to say, give me that. Because it's going to have to be more power efficient and you're going to have to be able to get more processing power out of it, like 150% versus an Intel base for it to make a dent. You're always going to have companies that are always going to be looking for this kind of thing, but I don't think they're the majority. I think it's really few and far between, except for maybe companies in New Zealand doing basically all of the animation for all of the Hollywood movies.
So here's the thing. You're not going to get your core, you're not going to be running Microsoft SQL on this. But what you can run on it is all of the open source software. You can run all of the Apache, all of the MySQL. You can run all of the kind of core behind the things that Linux has always done, which that's the big win to it. If it can do that, like you said, at a power savings or a cost savings versus the Intel tax, then they got a win.
Well, I will say, as of 2015, you can install SQL Server, Microsoft SQL Server on Linux. I can't understand why anybody would, but you could. But yeah, and that's why I say like the New Zealand Special Effects Studio, because they're already running on non-Windows. Let me rephrase that. Their core is already running on non-Windows infrastructure. All their clients, not all their clients, but a lot of their endpoints on that network are running on Windows stations. I don't know. I just want to see more competition in all fields, especially servers, because in my opinion, we haven't had good competition in servers for at least a dozen years.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'd like to see some benchmarks on this. It does look really good, to be honest with you. I definitely hear what you're saying as far as power consumption and heat as well, too, is a uh-huh. is a big changer with using ARM versus x86. But just to prove that it is capable of running without crashing, you know, or causing any hardware issues, I think the proof is in the pudding there. And I'd like to see some numbers.
Now, something like this, are they going to have an ILO or, you know, is there going to be some sort of management? And maybe I need to explain this. ILO stands for Integrated Lights Out. And when you're working with a data center type server, basically it allows you to be hands-on. You can, through this ILO operating system and CPU, reboot a computer, you can upgrade it to the firmware. All of the things that you would normally need to do by being hands-on, physically accessing a machine, that's what the ILO allows you to do. Because if they have an ILO for this, we know what they're gunning for.
What's up?
They're gunning for a data center.
Yeah, I'll say it's the same thing as the Intel vPro interface, which just means you can manage the computer on the board without directly relying on the computer. It's like a little mini embedded operating system in the firmware of the operating of the computer, to where you can actually watch the computer reboot from a distance. It's really interesting technology. And that to me is where it needs to be hardware based. Right. I don't see how you could insert anything into any port and get the same kind of functionality. Another link I just wanted to bring up, and it's only because I think it's going to at least get some traction. Line 794 in the notes. It is called, it has a good name, Atomic Pi. They definitely win like at least second or third place in best name of the year award. It is a Team IoT drops high-end powered $34 alternative to the Raspberry Pi with Atomic Pi. And Atomic Pi has an Intel Cherry Trail based system on a chip. Ooh. So it's an Intel based system on a chip.
$34
for 34 stinking.
How many of them are you buying?
As long as you can hold your breath, I'll buy you a couple. I don't know. I'm pretty sure right now it's still just on Kickstarter. It's not a quote unquote real thing yet. It's going to be 130 by 100 millimeters. It's going to have a X5 Z8350 quad core SoC with an Intel HD 400 graphics, 2 gig of DDR3, 1600 RAM, 16 gig eMMC, and a micro SD card that supports up to 256 gig of storage. It also is going to have 802.11ac dual band Wi-Fi, and it's going to have IPX connectors along with Bluetooth 4.0, serial interface, gigabit Ethernet, HDMI, USB 3.0, OTG, USB 2.0, and a TTL serial debug expansion port. For $30-something, I am shocked. I am shocked anyone is able to consume the Intel tax and offer such a board for so little.
That's pretty nuts. I think I need to get in on this. But they got to have a daughter board for the gig Ethernet. I don't see it. That looks like 2/3 the size of a Pi Zero, if I'm referencing it correctly.
Oh, no, it's bigger. It's bigger because my Odroid H2 is about the size of 3 Raspberry Pis, and it's 110 by 110. This is 130 by 100.
Oh, okay.
So this is definitely like at least 2 Raspberry Pis in size.
Now, this totes that you can install Windows 10, but with 2 gigs of RAM and Cherry Trail, I don't know. This would be really good in the headless mode.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll say you can install Windows 10 on it. I don't think you should.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I wouldn't go down that route.
Yeah, and it wouldn't shock me if some of the ports are right now not physical ports, but they're in pin format to where you have to take and connect via pin outs, either some of the USB ports or something else. Because it does kind of look like that.
Yeah, it looks a little too small for all that stuff.
I wonder what version eMMC flash storage they have on here. Yeah, it doesn't say. I know that with some of the later versions, you can get speeds close to SATA 3.
Right, and they had a $3,500 goal. They've made $72,000.
$3,500 was their goal? Are you reading that right?
I am.
That's wicked. That's awesome. Good for them.
Well, I'll say this. There is an extreme risk of getting too viral these campaign sites, because literally tomorrow they could wake up and have 1 million people expecting to get a board, and the likelihood that they're able to punch out, you know, an infinite number in a set time frame is, you know, planned failure. I don't see anything about eMMC speed, but that is a good question, Brian. I'll just say, if this price even remotely sticks, if it's even close to $34, even if it's $60, literally almost twice the price, even if it's almost twice the price, I still think it's kind of worth the money.
Yeah, $34, you can't beat that. I mean, Cherry Trail, the processor was good a few years ago, but since we've seen iterations of Intel processors that perform a little faster under Windows, it's still a pretty damn good processor. Like I said, in a headless mode, I think you're going to get a lot of work out of it.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing, honestly, that keeps me interested in the idea of mini computers, because just when I think I know what's going to happen next, this kind of thing comes along and completely defeats my idea of you can't, if you have an Intel chip, no matter what, you're going to have to pay an Intel tax. And if you have even modest hardware, it's going to be easily $100. And then they come out and they say $34.
Nice find, Dor. I like this one. What's the expected? Wait a minute. Was it January 29th?
Oh, I didn't see a date.
Yeah, there's dates. So they're talking mid-February for some stuff, January for other. Yeah.
Wow.
So the lower priced buy-ins are January 2019. So we're talking a couple of weeks now.
Yeah. I think I'd like to pick one of these up.
Damn right.
Well, I'll say this. There is definitely still more possibilities to talk about, including, and this one does come from Joel Rich, which he might have talked about on Tilts tonight. And that's okay. I don't mind seconds. I'd rather be seconds than not at all. Line 810 in the notes. GPD is a company, to be honest, I honestly like a lot. I've had now two or possibly three GPD handheld devices, and the quality of build of those devices are on par with the highest that I've touched for any other kind of device. Like they have a small handheld Android-based device that is literally just as well built, if not better, than the Nintendo 3DS. It is literally built that damn good. Well, GPD is coming out with a device called a micro PC. It's a little bit pricey, to be honest. $299. They call it a laptop.
Nah.
It's not a laptop. It's like a pocket top is what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
They have had successful Kickstarters with their GPD Win, and then they had the GPD Win 2, I believe. Both of them were able to run literally Dark Souls and games, full-fledged Windows games on this. But now this one is, they say, more of a IoT Pro. I have no idea what the hell that's supposed to mean, but this is basically a pocketable laptop style computer. You literally put it in your pocket, you flip the top like a 3DS. It's definitely bigger than I would have expected it to be. It's not big, it's just bigger. It has a 6-inch display, so it's basically a Nokia N910 size form factor, just a little bit bigger than that. Intel Celeron N4100 quad core Gemini Lake. We've heard that processor a gazillion times on this show. 4 gigs of RAM, 128 M.2 SSD, 3 USB 3 Type A ports, full size, 3 USB 3 ports, 1 USB Type C ports for charging and data, HDMI, RJ45, I believe that's a gig Ethernet, micro SD, backlit keyboard. They got me with that one. I really like a backlit keyboard, 6200 milliamp battery, and a serial port on this device. And somehow they say the serial port is what makes it something that the IT pro would like. I'll just say this. Hypothetically, I had $300 sitting around and I needed to run a full Intel based thing on the run, on the go. Wow, it would be really hard for me not to pick this up.
I'd like to see it on someone's hands. That's a 6-inch display. I'm curious on how easy it is to type on. Go ahead.
There is a YouTube video that Joel sent me, and I don't see it in the notes for some reason. But I know if I just do GPD micro PC, that should be the very first one. Yeah, and I'll make sure this link's in the notes. It's from, okay, the YouTube channel is spelled PHAUX, and I'm not going to say it, because when I say it, it basically sounds to me like a bad word. So I'm not going to say it, but I put a link there in the Mumble server for you, Brian, and I'll bookmark it, make sure it's in the notes.
It almost sounds like Fox. It has that fa sound to it.
If you say so.
But I do have to say, with your opening on this GPD. GPD has made a name for themselves. Every single time I see a review regarding GPD and their handheld systems, like you said, Dor, they're built with quality. They can do gaming like nobody's business. And I don't think I've seen a bad review on these things.
So,
the only thing I have to say is that they are pricey. You're paying for what you're getting.
This is another device. Like again, if you're walking around a data center and you need to patch into a switch or a router, and it only has serial console capabilities to direct into it, that's a big deal. And it would be cool to be able to reach into your pocket, pull this out, and plug in. That's a big win. I was like, huh. Now, if it had HDMI in, I could connect to a Raspberry Pi or another IoT-type device and see what's going on. That would be a cool thing.
Well, I'll say the only people I know who need to connect like that, on the go like that, are security vulnerability testers or somebody who thinks they're on the TV show Mr. Robot. And I can only tell you this, Brian. My now 10-year-old, going to be 11 here in a couple weeks, I've had now the GPD Pocket, the GPD XD is what it's called, GPD XD. I believe I got the 32 gig version. When I got it on sale, $140. It's now 3 years old. You still can't pay less than $150 for it. That's how good I got it on sale. But we used to call my youngest son Godzilla. And it wasn't because he was green and could breathe electric fire. It's because he destroyed everything. He stepped on everything. And he tried. He tried to destroy this thing. He's ripped off the cover on the dual sticks. There was a like sticky pad so you could have a little grip. He picked the rubber off of both of the sticks. He's dropped the device multiple times, multiple feet. The damn thing still works like butter, and I still get easily like 10 hours worth of battery life.
Wow.
Out of the damn thing.
Wow.
I try to be prudent with my purchases. I've thrown money away. I'm the guy who bought the Pi Top, the $300 Raspberry Pi in air quotes laptop that really wasn't worth $50. But with that, GPD is maybe the best money I've spent. And got the most time out of it, and it still works just like new.
Wow, we should do some sponsor for them.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they need us. I think they're doing just fine.
No, I agree. Yeah, this would work really good, like in a data center scenario where you don't have to hold your laptop like a pizza box, or walking from cage to cage. Like you said, Rich, you can slide this thing in your pocket, pull it out, and directly connect if you need to a switch or a router.
Yep. What was the last device you said?
Like a pizza box?
You said switch or?
Oh, a router.
I was teasing you because of your accent.
Oh, what did I say? A router?
It sounded like router.
Router.
Right. And I'll say I was very underwhelmed by CES this year. Now, I did go back and look, and there was more than a couple companies offering Intel NUC form factor computers, and a lot of them seemed like they had really good ports on them. They really did look good, and the prices they said were fair. I'm not excited about it, but I feel good about that. I saw more than a couple companies offering basically second screens. All it is literally a screen with a little bit of IO ports on it that you could plug up to like a laptop to have as a mobile on the go dual monitor setup. A couple of the companies even had like 14-inch screens for like $80, which was really nice, and they had like USB ports on it too as well. One of the things that actually did catch my eye, though, and I don't know why, line 816, once again going back to Lil Putin, one of my favorite websites that really does everything in its power to suck every penny out of my pocket. I like the idea of this, and what this is, it is a e-ink device, 10.3 inch. It's called the Onyx Books Note Pro. And then there's the 7.8 inch Onyx Books Nova Pro. Books is B-O-O-X. The thing is, these are full color e-ink displays.
Ooh, sexy.
Yeah, very nice.
And I'll say this, I'm not a reader at all, but I could definitely see loading up whether it be comic books or even technical manuals on this or reference type data sheets on this, and having it sitting next to me while I do work and just use it as a reference and be really useful. Just because it's e-ink, I would expect it to not be extremely overpriced is what I'm going to say. In the beginning, I can picture the 10-inch one hopefully being less than $100. I don't remember seeing a price, though. But I'll just say I like the idea of this.
I love the idea of this. Here's my reason. I love the tablets. I know tablets are fading away, but I really love my tablet. I like reading on it, but when I read on it, I get distracted. I want to watch a movie. I want to watch YouTube. So, something like this, and being in the technical field, you guys know we're always reading technical documents, white pages. This would be phenomenal. And like you said, Dor, if it's priced at a reasonable price, $100 or even less if it can be, I would definitely get one of these and just load it up with all kinds of books.
See, you know what I see it as? And again, the only place I use a tablet is in an airplane, when I'm flying one, meaning. This would be great for all of the charting in aviation. I love the e-ink idea because that means your battery's probably going to last forever.
Mm.
That would be super good for that. There's a lot of solutions for that out there, but I think that'd be pretty good.
Yeah, I like the big screen.
Yeah, for me and my old eyes, I need a 10-incher.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, and I hate saying it like this, but hypothetically, let's say $80. For $80, I could literally see, because the battery life, you know, on this thing is insane, right? Because it's e-ink.
Yeah, it's going to be like weeks.
It should be weeks, is what I'll say. I could literally see for $80 buying like 3 of these things. And putting one like by my front door and have it connected, and then every X minutes refresh it with information, like what's the weather, what's the traffic, what's the this, what's the that. Because it uses so low power, you could literally just once every like 2 weeks pull it off the wall, charge it overnight, and then voila, it's going to work again for 2 weeks. It does talk about having the ability to have onboard storage and micro SD card storage. The real question is if history's told me anything, if this thing is priced low enough, people are going to hack the crap out of this thing and make it uncommonly useful. Now, I will say I despise the idea of how much monitors seem to cost. I have seen in the last week more than a couple Raspberry Pi magic mirror solutions for less than $100. So that's why I said $80. If they could keep this price down under $100, I could literally see a use case where I buy a couple of these. Because with the color e-ink, I could literally have it display traffic patterns with color indicators and not just gray and light gray and dark gray. So, yeah. And I'm not an e-book kind of guy, but this did catch my eye.
Yeah, no, I'm not an e-book kind of guy either. And it did, like you said, catch my eye too as well. Man, that really looks nice. I'm just geeking out about the whole thing. Now, I was watching the video as you guys were looking over Quad HD. It's got a Quad HD display.
I'm pretty sure that's more than I would ever need.
All right. So, can I jump you guys to 820?
Absolutely.
So, this is the $86 Amazon Chrome stick computer. So, it's like USB drive sized. Realistically, what it looks like to me is a Fire Stick. Now, a Fire Stick is, I don't know, $40-$50. I don't know when the last time was I bought one, depending on the specs. So I like the idea. I think this could be cool for a bunch of different things, but why wouldn't I buy a Fire Stick and hack it, like sideload stuff onto it?
What's that running, the Fire Stick? Do you know what the specs are?
Well, it's basically Android.
Oh, right, this is an Android. Right. This is Chrome OS. They had Chrome sticks. Asus has had Chrome sticks for a while, is what I'm going to say. But they've typically been a little bit more than this. They've typically been like $100-$120 because it's literally most of the time I've seen compute sticks is what they were basically, just running Chrome OS. The question is what other Chrome OS functionality can you bring into the equation? Because you will not have a touch screen. You probably will not have any Android apps available on it, and you will probably have no Linux choices on it. We're now in some of the newest Chrome OS stuff. You can do that. Yeah, this is a Chrome bit. Chrome bits have been around for well over a year. No one has ever bought them. They have not sold, just like the Chrome boxes, which are Chrome OS desktop type devices. I love the idea of these things, but $86 is approaching what I would spend for it, but I would literally probably not spend $50 for it.
Well, think about in the SBC world, what you get for $86, $90. You're getting a lot of good stuff.
Well, the only reason to buy this is it isn't for me. It's for somebody who needs something unbreakable, something unflappable in the face of a user that doesn't know what the hell they're doing. That, to me, it's the only use case for this kind of thing. I can give it to somebody who I know has trouble, you know, putting a Word document in an email. And I can pretty...
So you double side tape it to the back of their monitor.
Right. I can have pretty good confidence they're not going to mess it up.
Yeah, you can basically turn any HD display into a computer, whether it's a big screen TV or 22-inch monitor.
Oh, and in case anybody hasn't done this recently and thought things changed, I have a 27-inch TV. It might be a 1080p, and I plugged it into the HDMI port of my computer. Oh my God, is it horrible. But plugging a Raspberry Pi in isn't so bad.
Yeah, I actually do the same thing with I have a 30-inch TV with HDMI, and it's not that bad. It could be a lot better. As a matter of fact, as I'm sitting here saying that, my plans for next year is to get two 4K displays for my next build. So it's getting long in the tooth.
Yeah, I got, I think it's 60-inch TV upstairs. I honestly don't know. It's actually running my newest x86 hardware, not my Odroid H2, but my Lenovo Flex 15, which is like 3-year-old laptop. I actually have that connected up to the TV upstairs only because I can run Steam on it. I can run a full Chrome browser in Plex and the Plex Speed plugin, so I can literally watch videos at 2x, and I can run Kodi right off the desktop. And I have no issues with resolution. I think it looks good. You know, it isn't a 4K TV or anything, but it runs, I'll say, fine.
So we're talking about the this Chrome stick here, 18 watts of power.
Is that good?
That's awesome, man. 18 watts? This thing's pulling eight. I mean, I'm sure that's, I don't know if that's under load, but what are you going to put under load on this thing? And I think it's running the Rock chip 33. Hang on a second. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, the Rock chip 3328, 4-core processor. So you can do 4K, USB 3.0, but it's got USB 2.0 on this. You can run Android 7.1, but it's running Chrome. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is the processor's not that bad. So I think this is pretty good for someone who, like you said, doesn't really know how to use a computer and that just need something connected.
Oh, okay. Hey, I want to pick line 811 since I entered it. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is we have devices and, you know, we don't kind of think about what to use them for and how to use them. So if you have a Raspberry Pi type device or better, you can run Pi-hole. But what you don't realize is we've passed a couple of articles between ourselves over the last couple of weeks. A lot of the TV manufacturers are making a smidge over what their costs are on the TV. But where they're making the money is they're selling you. The TVs are phoning home. Your smart TV is phoning home. One of the articles was titled something like, Why a Dumb TV is More Expensive. And the reason is because the smart TV phones home and they have data that they're collecting on you that they're selling to other people. So with Pi-hole and this list, and there should be other people developing lists for other products, but this is specifically targeting Samsung smart TV, is it's blocking the outgoing DNS. So when the TV looks up who it's going to phone home to, it's not getting there. So I think that's pretty cool, because one of the things I worry about is all of these, and I hate using the IoT phraseology and edge and all that bit, but all of these IoT devices that we're bringing into our homes are that are phoning home on a regular basis. And, you know, F you, I bought it, I own it, and you're not making money off my watching habits.
You can make money off me. Just cut me a check at the end of the year.
That's the other thing. Or, you know, how do they assemble this? Oh, gosh, I don't know if I want to talk about this on the show about a phone call I got today. Because it's not tech, but I'll tell you guys when we're done with the show.
All right.
Yeah, I would say this is a list of domains, like 90 domains long. It doesn't matter. It's not going to work. You can blacklist all the domains.
You say
it's
going to do an update
They're going to keep adding more domains. And when you block these domains, functionality in the TV will be lost. It's a given. You're guaranteed you're going to lose functionality.
And that's the thing. So you say, well, I'll get a dumb TV. Well, that's fine. I got two dumb TVs, and then I plugged, you know, either Rokus or Fire Sticks or whatever into them. So they're floating home also, I'm sure.
Yeah, privacy is a dream. Yep. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, that is correct.
What I'll say is I will quote a album from, I'm sure none of you guys have heard of them, from the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy from 1992, from the album Hypocrisy is the Greatest Luxury. And the line is, TV is the drug of a nation.
Uh-huh.
Because it is. They are basically banking on the fact that we can't say no.
Right.
All we keep saying is, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, just give me just one more hit. Whether it is Netflix, whether it's King of Game of Thrones, whether it's any of these things, whether it's Blacklist, we cannot say no to this stuff. And they're banking on the fact that we can't say no to this. I will much rather take any content and run it off a computer screen than off a TV, only because I at least have some illusion of control.
Even your Plex server wants to phone home.
Oh, it does. There's no doubt in my mind it phones home. But here's the other thing. There has not been a single instance of a single person getting a single charge on them for sharing any content via the Plex service that we know of. And I firmly believe it's only because of our corporate environment makes it much more valuable to them to keep our information private and secured versus giving it up to authorities or other services that would take us to court or, you know, file any like charges on us. Because there's no doubt in my mind, 90%+ of all the Plex instances that have a public facing WAN port of 32400 are actually sharing content with friends and family that can easily be deemed illegal. But there's no charges coming up. There's no DMC letters going in the mail. There's no none of this, or else we would hear about it somewhere, and nobody's doing it. So as long as Plex adheres to the customer as being the actual only person they care about, I'm perfectly okay with using Plex and putting all kinds of stuff on there. I've literally downloaded weird stuff from 1979 Cosmos with Carl Sagan, Milton Friedman TV series called Free to Choose, downloaded a whole bunch of non-normal stuff as well, but including Star Trek Continues, which I will say, I don't know if I said on this show, I will tell everyone at least once in their life, if you liked at all Star Trek, the original series, at all, if you liked it at all, you need to not watch garbage crap like Star Trek Discovery, which was only created to make a profit. And you need to watch something like Star Trek Continues, which was made with love and passion and wanted to adhere to the old ideals and philosophies of the original series, and we're not out to make a penny off of anything. It is fantastic content that adheres the old methodology of that show. If you didn't like the original series, don't watch it. You'll hate it and say it sucks.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I got to look that up again, and thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, I forgot about Star Trek Continues. Thank you.
Yeah, it is a YouTube-only thing that was explicitly created with the one rule is they're not going to commercialize it. No one is into this to make money. This is simply a tribute to the original show. Unfortunately, it's only like 11 episodes long. but it has surprise guest appearances is what I'll say, with even with people like Lou Ferrigno is in it, the original Apollo from the original series is in it. Troy from The Next Generation plays the voice of the computer because the lady who did the voice of the computer died. So, you know.
Very nice. Are you guys Star Wars fans, by the way?
I used to be.
Used to be, yeah.
I feel like everything made from Star Wars in the last 5 years has had nothing to do with what I like about Star Wars, and I think it's just been made to make money off of a younger generation that doesn't know no better. Mm-hmm. But that's just me.
The Roger Rabbit one really ticked me off.
The Roger Rabbit one. Well, there is a Star Wars fan created a fan film that's been going viral that you should probably check out if you like the original Star Wars. And,
oh, yeah, sure.
And, I think I'm not too sure how long it's going to last because it's got a ton of copyright stuff on there. But this guy did a phenomenal job.
Well, give me a link and I'll say on my Plex server, I have A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi despecialized versions of them, which are as close as possible to the original theatrical release for each of those movies. And they're better, I'll say, than what I see on TV now.
Roger, Roger. I know, I remember that. Yeah, I remember you. We were talking about that a while ago. The name of the show, it's on YouTube. It's called Vader Episode 1.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shards of the Past. You've seen it?
Oh, that was... It is obviously fan film, but it's obviously also made from somebody who really knows the Star Trek verse. I thought that was some of the best Star Wars stuff I've seen in 10 years.
Yeah, top notch. Well made. He's definitely making a name for himself. Lucasfilms are definitely aware of this guy. He's pretty smart to doing something like that. Pretty cool.
Very cool. Well, were there any more links in the notes that you guys wanted to bring up?
Yeah, sure. Let's go numerically. 812. So this is the NetGate SG1100 launchpad. So it's a higher speed ARM PFSense firewall.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
So PFSense you can run on Intel hardware. It's a free download, which is nice. Unfortunately, if you get into the ARM-based, you got to pay money. So this thing is $150. But if you're looking for a highly configurable firewall, like enterprise-level firewall on a budget, this is a good fit. All right, it's $159. Sorry.
Yeah, I honestly cannot say I've ever heard of NetGate. When I first looked at this link, I swore it said Netgear.
Yeah, NetGate, the prior version looked very much like Raspberry Pi, you know, as far as the port layout and all of that. This looks different. NetGate makes some hardware, and, you know, I guess they got to deal with PFSense. But look, if you had a small office, this would be a great product for you. And, you know, maybe some of us more geeky people at home, it would be a great product. I keep talking about having a VLAN for all my IoT stuff so it doesn't mingle with my regular traffic.
The reason why I like this is because I actually just picked up a firewall very similar to this, a quad-core processor, for a little bit more money. I mean, it's got four extra ports on it, or actually two extra ports. What is this? Three ports, actually. No, it's got one additional port with USB 2.0. And I love it. I'm running PFSense right now.
Oh, so this would have been good for you?
Yeah, it's working awesome. like I said, I didn't get this particular model. I got the Celeron processor, the J1900 64-bit processor. I'm trying to remember who the name of the company was. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the company. But yeah, it's a firewall micro application with 4 gig ports. And I've got, I'm using two cable modems on it where it's allowing me to load balance my connections.
Woo, what are you consuming?
Video games. My kids love the video games. So we got a ton of gaming going on in the house. And obviously a lot of video streaming stuff too.
So you're really uber geeking on that.
Yeah, I'm loving this thing. It's really cool.
So here's my question about the SG1100. First off, It sounds like something from Stargate, which instantly gives it credibility in my book. But it has a USB, it has a WAN port, a LAN port, and then an OPT port. What the hell is OPT?
OPP.
That's OPP. You know me. No, that's optional. So, and that's where it allows that port specifically, you can turn into pretty much anything you want. And I have two optional ports, a LAN port and a WAN port. And with my WAN port, obviously, I have going to my router. I mean, my cable modem. And the optional port or the OPT port, I'm going into another cable modem, which I turn that into a WAN port. So you can use it as an optional port, or you can turn it into another LAN port if you wanted to and have it going to a separate network.
So you could dual LAN, dual WAN.
Yeah, yeah. And what's cool about the one that I have, it has a built-in optional. You can either put an M.2 drive in, and it has space for internal wireless. So you can actually have a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Uh-huh. Like a hotel-type Wi-Fi?
Yeah, yeah. Great. And pfSense is awesome. I mean, it's got some industrial-grade software in there, so you can't get any... You can't get better than that when you're buying firewall stuff. You're not going to find this in a Netgear or Linksys or stuff like that. The pfSense is rock solid.
Oh, yeah. And the thing that I will say is it also has USB 3 on this device, but people have to remember, the company doesn't even do a good job of advertising it. They just say it's USB 3. It's not USB 3. It's actually USB 3.2. Which is SS, which is 5 gigabit a second transfer speed, which is essentially like 5 times as fast as USB 2.0. So it's not just USB 3, it's blazing fast USB 3 port on this. And
good catch.
I understand, and I'll say, I understand why some people would rather use something like Tangled. And I will say, if you want to use Untangled, the latest episode of the Computer Repair podcast here on Podnuts, Jeff interviews 2 people from that company that does the untangled firewall on episode 305. And I respect Untangled for what it is. But if I am an admin who insists on having unbelievable stability and unbelievable control, there you cannot get a better solution than pfSense, unless you want to literally do all of the IP table configuration by hand. The next best level of control is pfSense, and pfSense has been the most like rock solid thing in enterprise infrastructure for, I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah, I was actually running Untangled for a while, and I was geeking out on it for a little while. But previous to that, I was running pfSense, and I switched to Untangled. And Untangled was very easy to install, very easy to set up, but there was a paid portion of it. And I don't mind paying, you know, for software. It was a annual payment that you had to pay to keep up with some of their firewall statements. And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit, you know, paying it on the monthly basis. It's like that gift that keeps on giving. I just wasn't feeling that. So I kind of went back to pfSense.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, in the last year and a half or so, I think that they did change their structure, where before it was a freemium model or an open core model where you could download Untangle and for free you could run a large amount of stuff, but then for certain stuff or for certain functionality or for certain things, you had to pay for it. I do believe they basically switched it over to where now, if you're paying, you're paying for support, like hands-on, near real-time support, like you never get on hold kind of support. And you also have the ability to have like a managed plan to where you don't even have to log in and do updates. They'll log in and do the updates for you as well. So I think they've wised up. If I remember hearing the episode correctly, I do believe that they've wised up. And the whole selling feature to Untangled is you don't have to be an administrator. You don't have to be a lifelong administrator in order to log in and do basic things. So it has its use cases, my logic. Just not for somebody like us.
Wow, that's pretty cool. If they did change that, I'd like to revisit that again.
I think they did. I'm not going to say they did, but I thought they did. And yeah, I do believe. Oh man, see, I'm not. I'm going to try to guess here. The Edge router, which was one of the things that Steve Gibson mentioned because of its power. For like $50, this thing could do what easily $300 hardware could do. The Edge router is what it's called.
Yeah, I was looking at that too as well before buying this one.
Yeah, I got it here. And you know it's bad when Steve Gibson says, you know, that's a really good device, but you better have your propeller hat wound pretty tightly in order to set it up and manage it. Where something like, and I do believe if it wasn't this exact hardware he was talking about, because he did mention on this last week's show, $150 pfSense device, he said, don't let the interface of pfSense scare you off. He said, it's actually really easy to use. And for $150, it's hard to beat the type of functionality you can get inside of it. I think it's a really smart buy. And to be honest, if you're the kind of person who's looking into becoming more of a network administrator, I think it's a really good use case to buy yourself some dedicated hardware, put it on your own network, and play with it. You can get by with less when it comes to pfSense, but when it comes time to you want something that really will run like a professional piece of hardware, for $150, I think it's hard to beat.
Dude, it's a steal. When you're talking about network appliance that has the functionality that pfSense has, you're talking north of $500. You know, $1,000, $3,000, even more. And when you're getting up to that price range, you know, you're paying for, you know, the speed, obviously, and support, and you know, reliability. But even with a box like this, you're going to get reliability. If you're putting it in your house or a small business, you know, the speed, when I'm talking speed, I mean like ASIC speed, well, not ASIC speed, but deep packet inspection speed, you know, when you really have to look at each and individual packets and you have like, you know, 100 people or more behind your network, you want the speed. You don't want your throughput that you're paying for to be throttled because you're doing some deep packet inspection. I mean, looking at each packet, seeing what's inside of it, and say yes or no, whether I want to send that or not. When you're doing something like that, you're paying for it. But with something like this, you really can't beat that price. It's hands down the best, I think. It ranks up there. Good pick. Good pick, Rich. That's a good one.
Yeah, and the other hardware was the Edge Router X. And I'm not a domain administrator. Okay, I was a domain administrator, but I wasn't a very good domain administrator. I don't know networking. I don't know the layers. I don't know any of that stuff. I played with this thing for a solid 3 hours, and I could not get the damn thing up and running right. And 3 hours after that, I figured out, because it requires a real live heartbeat connection to the internet, and it needs to be the DHCP server on your network, or else it will not run. And I said to myself, self, it's going to take well over an hour to get this thing up and running and configured to how I want. That means I got to kick everybody off the home network for that amount of time. Sorry. And I still have not connected the damn thing up. It's been sitting here for over a year, and I'm tempted just to bring it to the next conference I go to and give it away.
Wow. I've actually heard that same comment in regards to what you're talking about. And I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't get it.
Yeah. I mean, all it would need to do is enabled to be set up off network. You literally cannot finish the configuration if it's not on network and not have a real connection out to the internet, because it wants to verify everything as you do it. And it really did make me mad. And then I would have to set every router into bridge mode and not do any double NATing or anything. And I don't like the idea of that either. Yeah, I know real networking professionals hate the idea of double NATing. I will say to all the network professionals out there, you don't know what you're talking about. I've double NATed now for 15 years and never had a problem.
Yeah, same here.
You want to talk about your failing, Rich, and how you got ripped off and you haven't sent it back yet?
No, come on. I'm using mine. Mine works awesome. Can't hear you. Nope.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Yay.
Oh, I got to hit the button. All right. Got you back. So, Brian and I guess, bought these, and one integrates, I have a Google Home. Are you Google Home, Brian?
Yeah.
It works with Google Home, Alexa. Apparently, it'll interface also with my home automation assistant. This is like a rebranded Tuya. Wait, what was the price we paid for these with the discount code?
It was like $22.
I saw one with less, maybe a different configuration, and it was like $45. So what it is a smart power strip. It has.
Your audio dropped out again.
Am I back? It has four AC outlets that are individually controllable. It also has four USB ports, and one of the reviews made it seem like they were individually controllable, but they're not. So I was a little unhappy about that, and I go to power my Raspberry Pi 3 off it, and it says low voltage, which I'm kind of shocked because it's the only device I had plugged into it. So the use of it will be, like my Odroid XU4 is the heartbeat of my house, and I had to have my daughter reboot it, but I'll plug it into this and be able to remote reboot it whenever I want. So it will serve a purpose, even though the bonus to me would have been having four working USB ports that supplied enough power to run, you know, Pi devices, but it'll still be useful.
Well, I have a Pi plugged into that. I didn't check the voltage. I didn't check the screen to see if it was low voltage or not, but I plan on plugging in a few more additional devices in there.
Yeah, I was getting the lightning bolt in the corner, and on boot, it was saying low voltage, which I was kind of shocked.
Yeah, me too. Do you have anything plugged into the AC outlets in addition?
Yeah, I had a couple of things, but that shouldn't be a factor. If it is, that's shocking. Maybe.
Yeah. I'll say if it had four USB ports that were all independently controllable, I would happily pay $70-$80 for it.
And I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag. Anyhow.
The reason why I got it was because of the individual AC outlets that you can control. Because I got just a smart switch with just one outlet, and I believe that was like $30, maybe $34.
That's a lot of money to be and lazy.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was for Christmas, and controlling the Christmas lights on the outside seemed like a good idea at the time, and it worked really good. But something like that worked even better with what I'm using it for. So I can, instead of leaving my routers and switches for my test lab running all the time, constantly, I can just say, hey, G, turn on my lab, and I can turn on three switches at the same time.
That's cool.
Or individually on and off, you know?
So this is a Tekin, T-E-C-K-I-N. It basically is a rebranded Tuya, T-U-Y-A, in case anybody's wondering. The deal is gone. So there was, on Tech Bargains, there was a price, you know, a coupon code to get the money off. And I buy a lot of stink stuff that way by trolling Tech Bargains. I'm going to bring the fail to the end of the show. So I shared, I thought I had a link for this. It was for Raspberry Pi 3 image identification. So it would either use the Pi camera or a USB cam and identify, you know, people or other objects. And the install was multiple hours. So one part would take an hour, another part would take an hour, another part would take 2 hours. Well, one of the compiles failed, and I could not get it to work. The guy had a YouTube video, and it was pretty good, you know, detailing how it all worked. I've done a couple of videos like that. I really appreciate it. So you see every keystroke, everything entered, because sometimes people assume you know something, and you don't. And then that's the thing that you spend like 45 minutes to try and understand because it's new technology, and everybody else understands it because they've been doing it forever. And so it was very good because it showed every single step. So it was very highly appreciated.
They still couldn't get it to run, though, right?
Nah, there may have been library updates in between and code updates, but the methodology I was using should have ran. And I was kind of shocked. I did, you know, comment to the guy on his YouTube video. It's like, hey, do you have an image file for your Raspberry Pi available? And if I did get it running, I was going to, you know, genericize it with my passwords and post it so other people could use it. But again, my holy grail is person identification and facial recognition. It's like, hey, this is a person walking around on your property. And yes, this is somebody you know that should be there, or the opposite. That's what I'm shooting for.
I would definitely like to see that up and running. Yeah. I think that's pretty cool. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work, actually.
Gosh, it was very not like it's hard. It's more tedious than anything. But, you know, some repo of something gets incompatible with an update, then you're your host.
Right. Well, I mean, I did have a RetroPie build process that on the Raspberry Pi 1 or 2 literally took like 24 hours. That at least would, like, it would daisy chained the scripts together, so it was at least, you know, keep going on kind of thing. The bad thing about building from source is sources are always changing, so timing is everything. You could have started it 20 minutes earlier and it might have worked. You could have started it 20 minutes later and it could have worked. You don't really know, so all you can do is you can try it again and see if it fails again. Line 817 in the notes, this was at CES, and it is a ASRock debuts world's smallest AM4 motherboard, comes with desk mini system, and it is a AMD Ryzen all-in-one system on a chip kind of thing. It's just a gigantic board. It's basically like a very small micro ATX. It's actually called micro STX form factor, which is 5 inches by 5 inches board, and it does have baked in a Ryzen, basically by name, card.
So it's Mac Mini sized.
It looks, well, they have it standing up on its end, and it looks like a little bit bigger. And I could have swore it said Ryzen in it someplace, but now I don't see it. Oh, AMD's Raven Ridge and Bristol Ridge processors. Whatever in the hell that's supposed to mean. But at least this does show that AMD is trying to do other stuff. So my logic is, if they're doing this already, then maybe even before May, we might see higher end Ryzen type boards. I don't remember honestly seeing a price on this thing either. Retail, the bare bones version of it looks with no processor, no RAM, $119.
Wow. But what is the processor? It's not a Ryzen, or is it a subspecies of a Ryzen?
I could have swore it said Ryzen.
Your brain
I don't
saw
see
Ryzen.
It. I guess.
Yeah, you can either slot a Ryzen 5 2500U or a Ryzen 3. It's one of their mobile processors. Again, pretty good stuff. It's nothing to joke about.
Okay, well, if you guys didn't have anything more to
add. I got three more things. I'll make it quick. Line 804, backing up your Raspberry Pi micro SD card. So you can just include the link. That was the first successful method that I got. And the reason I was barking up that tree was because my Observium wasn't working. So I tried to install Observium on Armbian 1804, but the script I used, thank you for reminding me about install scripts, from GitHub, did not have 1804 in there. And I tried to jury-rig the script and get it to work. I finally used Armbian 1604, got the Observium script to run on that because that's what it did before. And what was the other thing? So Duplicati, I forgot Duplicati is a client-based backup, not a client-server and not a server-based backup. So I actually installed Duplicati on my Odroid HC1 and uninstalled it after I realized what I did. So don't waste your time. If you don't fall into the mistake, really want to go Duplicati to replace, because what I was thinking about is I was replacing CrashPlan, which was client server on both ends. And, still smoke testing the Duplicati, so far so good. Duplicati's open source, multi-platform, and so multiple destinations. So you could do it locally to some device like SSH, FTP, SFTP, or you could do it to almost anybody in the cloud. So great product as far as that goes. Open source, free. I ought to send them some bucks because it's looking better and better all the time.
Very cool, very cool. Brian, if people want to catch up with you, how would you say they do that?
I would say Google Plus, but things are getting very bleak these days. So I'd say send an email over to podnuts.com and hit me up through Podnuts. Or, like I said, hit me up on Google Plus, Ask the Cable Guy, and you can find me there.
Very cool. Rich?
It's the new and improved FlyingRich.com. That's right, FlyingRich.com for all of your Flying Rich social media.
I'll just say, look at the notes. If you're too lazy to look at the notes, don't contact us. We don't want you contacting us. There's information in the notes. It's called Words and Reading. Now, Google Play, within the next month, is going to unveil a feature where they're going to enable on-the-fly audio transcription on podcasts.
That's crazy.
Which is going to be huge for the little guy, as long as they do it fairly and offer it basically to every podcast, because it's going to mean everything that we say in every show will be searchable and indexable, which will mean iTunes will die in less than a year unless they do something drastically different. iTunes is trying to focus on the fact that they're going to be able to tell advertisers lies and fake numbers of how much people are listening and when they're stopping listening and stuff. They're not going to be able to tell anybody anything that they don't already know. And it's in Apple's best interest to lie and manipulate the numbers greater than they actually are, which means that they're just going to do anything in their power to get the same amount of money they're already getting. Google is coming at this brand new. All they want is eyeballs. So I really do think, like, in the next year, anybody's going to be able to tell anybody. We don't have to do any notes anymore. Just go to Google Play and search for blah, blah, and you'll find us. And I will say, there is right now a podcast search engine out there called Listen Now. I'm sorry, Listen Notes, all one word, listennotes.com. I did test it, and I tested it with this show. I basically put in RK3399 into the search engine, and it was literally the number one and two links are Mini PC Show, episode 79, Mini PC Show, episode 70. So the service does work for at least titles and notes. Hopefully we're going to have this year, we're going to have an actual indexable search engine for the spoken word as well. And if that happens, I can see podcasting becoming even bigger, better, more popular, and more fun to do. You can go over to podnuts.com. You can shoot us an email there. The easiest way is to just send an email to mail@podnuts.com. And if you talk about many PC-related things, I'll make sure I forward it to Rich and Brian. I want to thank them for their support throughout the years, and I want to thank everyone for downloading and helping us with the show. And we will talk to everyone again real soon.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network, and we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.